Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome to a questions answered edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. No long monologue today, folks. We're jumping straight into the action, bringing down the Tide's season opening beatdown of Utah State in Tuscaloosa, 55-0. And we're going to start with offense. And the offense, boy, I tell you, they were clicking. Alabama scored on their first nine possessions. They racked up 30 first downs, 559 yards of total offense, which is pretty impressive. And the distribution is actually kind of incredible. 281 yards passing and 278 yards rushing. Mathematically, you almost can't split it any tighter than that. So that was quite impressive. When we start on offense, we typically do start with the quarterbacks. And so we're going to do that again. Bryce Young, no Heisman hangover to the extent that that was a question anywhere. Absolutely not. His numbers were, I don't want to say misleading. I don't want to say they were bad. They were interesting how his numbers sort of cobbled together. From a passing perspective, he was 18 of 28. You know, the percentage there is okay. He had 195 yards, and that even surprised me. He had five passing touchdowns, and so intuitively I was thinking that his yardage total would be higher than a 195. He was just incredibly efficient with his passing. He had five carries for 100 yards, which is a little surprising. He had a long of 63. There was some thought, I thought that he might be a more willing runner this year, his second year, especially coming off the Heisman campaign. You know, he made the comment a couple of times last year about, you know, I don't want to say stigma that some black quarterbacks have of only being runners or being athlete first and quarterback second, and that he was intentional in wanting to establish himself as a passing quarterback. And what better way to do that than win the Heisman? So I don't think there's any question what type of quarterback Bryce Young is. He's a winning quarterback, and he is a dynamic passer. But he is an athlete, and given an open field, he seems more willing. Game one, more willing to take the opportunity. Last year, we even commented on the podcast that he almost had an allergy, you know, towards the line of scrimmage, that he would move around, he'd move backwards to sort of clear space, but he wouldn't attack running the line of scrimmage. He would later in the season, but it wasn't his MO. It wasn't a weapon per se. And I don't know that it's going to be a weapon this season, but he certainly demonstrated a willingness to attack the line of scrimmage. He commented he had 100 yards and a touchdown, so and five carries, and so it was not just an accidental thing that he found himself in space. In his postgame presser, he talked about, you know, running to green space, and so if there's green space, I'm going to run into it, and green grass, and he mentioned green grass probably four or five times, and so it's clearly something that he has thought about, the coaches have thought about. Let's not be reckless. We're probably not going to run into rounds with them necessarily, but if the opportunity presents itself, then don't be afraid to pick up a first down, move the chains with the first down. Maybe work on the sliding a little bit, but overall, I thought his day was quite impressive, even though the 195 kind of surprised me. Yeah, again, you throw five touchdowns, you just think that there's going to be more yards involved. So incredibly efficient in his day. You know, he was having fun out there. He was comfortable. He was in control. And he seemed more so Saturday against Utah State than probably he did at any point last season, which is, you know, maybe itself impressive. He had really good movement in the pocket. And he did have a play that sort of reminded me of the Tua play at Vanderbilt a few years ago. Just the phone booth movement, knowing where the receiver is, and if I could just defender get out of my way, I'm going to connect on a big play here. And he did that for the first down. Tua at Vanderbilt did that for a touchdown. But the compare is, I know where the receiver is going to be. Just get out of my way so I can throw the pass. And I thought that was very, very impressive. I like to see that. Backup quarterback, actually both played. Jalen Milroe came in first. He was 8 of 10 for 76 yards, touchdown, and interception. A lot of people talk about, or a lot of the reading commentary that I saw seemed to isolate on the interception. It was a nice pass down the field. He was just off the mark a little bit. It's one I think he'd like to have back, because I think he definitely could have and should have connected with the receiver. So there's work there to be done. But I thought overall he looked good. And again, he was 8 of 10, and he did have a touchdown. He's, I think, a more willing runner than Bryce was last year. And so it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. And he just absolutely trucked a defensive back. There was no illusion of trying to juke the guy. He just lowered his shoulder and trucked him. And so that was interesting to see. There's that level or that type of athleticism that Milroe brings to the table. And he's a bigger body. He's a bigger athlete than is Bryce. Ty Simpson came in. He was 1 of 2 passing. Not really much to evaluate there. He was very much in a mop-up duty. And there's some speculation I saw that Alabama might try to redshirt him this year, create a little bit of separation in his eligibility from Milroe. But we'll see how that plays out. I think Ty is going to be potentially the quarterback of the future. We don't know exactly when that future begins, but I don't think it's this season. So we'll see him in spot duty. I don't know that he'll get a whole lot of opportunity to showcase his passing talent, but I do believe he has it, and he's going to be a fun one to watch into the future. So I think the story of the day, and we can talk about defense and we can talk about quarterbacks, and we certainly will, but I think the story of the day is the wide receiver position. You know, how do you replace John Metchie and Jameson Williams? And, you know, at Alabama, I guess you just kind of reload. We may have asked this time a year ago, how do you replace Smitty and Waddle? And Metchie and Jamo stepped in. And so the fact that we might have a version of that question this year is not altogether a surprise, because the level of talent that has come through the wide receiver position at Alabama has been outstanding. And it's no surprise that there are candidates on the roster, and we saw many of them Saturday, that may very well step into those roles. And a year from now, we may be asking, how do we replace these guys? So we'll see how that goes. On Saturday, there were 11 different receivers catching the ball. So I really like the distribution there. And what's interesting, 6 of those 11 were making their first catches at Alabama or for Alabama. 3 were transfers, and 3 were true freshmen. So, again, an incredible amount of distribution. And this is without the leading returning receiver, Cam Latu, without him being able to play Saturday. So the fact that Bryce came out and looked as comfortable as he did and distributed the ball to just a host of receivers like he did was just super impressive. And a couple of guys, Trayshawn Holden, a junior, I think he is set for just a breakout season this year. He paced the receivers. He had 5 catches for 70 yards, 2 touchdowns. Jermaine Burton, the transfer from Georgia, he also had 5 catches. He was incredibly efficient with his catches. He had 35 yards, but he too had a pair of touchdowns, which is certainly impressive. And Kobe Prentice, true freshman, noted on the depth chart as a starter. Be careful talking about that to Saban. But he had 5 catches for 60. Didn't have a touchdown, but, man, he looked really comfortable. He looked really athletic in the slot. I think he's going to be a problem for teams. A couple other, you know, pass catchers of note, Jahmyr Gibbs. It was nice to see the running backs involved. 3 running backs caught passes. Gibbs was one. Kitzelman had a pass. He's the tight end transfer. So it was nice to see him involved. And a couple of other freshmen, Isaiah Bond and Kendrick Law, both caught passes, and I think both of them have an opportunity to be impressive. Isaiah Bond might be a name to remember, so it'll be fun to see how that goes. An incredible amount of talent at the wide receiver position for Alabama. an incredible amount of talent and upside. So that's something certainly to watch. I think the improvement here will be significant. It'll be leaps and bounds as the season progresses. These individual players that played on Saturday will improve incrementally as players do. But Tyler Harrell, the transfer from Louisville, he was in a walking boot Saturday. He's going to get back to health, and we're going to see his speed, which promises to be impressive. And JoJo Earl, who also has a foot issue, he's going to miss, my speculation, and that's all it is my speculation. I think he probably misses to the bye, and then we work him in, the last third of the season, if you will. And I think he was otherwise poised for a breakout season. So let's see what he does when he comes back. I think, what may have been all the articles, fans on the Zoom call, we talked about, which receivers are going to step up. And what was a question 24, 36 hours ago, I think we have the answer. And what's interesting, and, this is Alabama doing Alabama things. What was a question, a potential weakness, is poised to be a significant strength for this 2022 team. So that'll be fun to watch as that develops. Running back, I think for my money, if you're asking me, I'm going to say that this was underrated as an issue in the preseason. I think it should have been a bigger question with the injury, players coming back, and the transfer. I think that should have been a bigger question than it was. However, never mind. It's incredible. Transfer Jahmyr Gibbs was electric. I think, I think Utah State bottled him up early. I think they were spying him. I think they were really targeting him. And they said, if we can take away Gibbs, who threatens to be dynamic, especially with the run fit issue that Utah State had against UConn, I thought, man, Gibbs could really blow up. And I think they were intentional in focus. He was a point of focus. But still, he had 9 carries for 93 yards, right at a 10-plus average. Now, he did have a long of 58 and really sort of demonstrated, he can gash you at any time. And I'm actually surprised that they were able to chase him down, score, and prevent the score. But he was just electric once he got through the line of scrimmage. He's a tough one to catch and is going to be a very potent weapon for Alabama this year. He also had a catch for 5. As impressive as I thought Gibbs was, especially on that one run, I think my net sort of level of impression or being impressed at the running back position is Jason and Roydell, both returning from knee injuries, significant knee injuries last season. And the fact that they were both able to suit up is impressive. If they had suited up and stood on the sideline, we've had generations, seasons past, where the leading rusher or a star from a prior year's team who had a knee injury of that nature, it's the second year before they really come back. And they may play some 1 year back, but it's almost, a calendar year mark. And these guys were injured much deeper into the season. And to make week one, if you'd asked me candidly in the offseason, I wouldn't have guessed that would have been possible. So the fact that they both came back, and that's why I think it was a bigger question in my mind than maybe others were saying. But both came back, both played well, limited. Jace had 5 carries for 23 yards, so he was effective. He also had 2 catches for 25 and 2 touchdowns. Very impressive. Roydell had 3 carries for 15 yards, very physical runner. He demonstrated that was on display. And he got injured about 4 weeks after, or about a month after Jace. And so even a little bit less time in his recovery. And he had 1 catch for 7. So it was good to see him utilized in that way. Both of those fellows, very, very impressive, really make a significant running back group for the Tide. Trey Sanders had one carry for 5 yards. I thought he looked good when he was in there, what he was doing. Again, he didn't get a whole lot of reps, but he's a player. He's kind of, for whatever reason, sort of one of my favorites. And so I hope to see more and more of him. Although these carries are going to be tough to come by. There's so much talent. And Jamarian Miller, the true freshman, you have to absolutely be impressed with his performance late in the game. He had 7 carries for 32 yards and just showed a great burst to get into the edge. Just some explosiveness there. It's going to be interesting to see how this sort of shakes out, because you start adding numbers and bodies, and he's 6 deep. And so how do you get a lot of action when you're 6 deep? It'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because he certainly was impressive Saturday. Again, I don't want to take anything away from the opponent, but you do need to keep that in mind. We're going to go into some of these games and probably shorten our bench a little bit, but we're going to have guys that are on pitch counts, right? Jace, Roydell, potentially Trey. And so that may, Jamarian at 6, it may feel like more like he's a 3.5 than in a 60, because so many of the players ahead of him are likely going to be on pitch counts. Jahmyr Gibbs himself, he was the feature back at Georgia Tech, but I don't think he ever – I don't think his carry total was that high. I think he maybe averaged 19 carries a game. I'd have to go back and look at the stat. I read it. I cataloged it, but I don't remember the exact number. But it was a lower number. And so you start to think about, we've got a couple guys injured, and maybe they're on a pitch count, and Jahmyr, maybe he's not a 25 carry back. And then so if you're further down in the pecking order, there may be more scraps that sort of fall down the table. We'll see how that plays out. And I think we certainly have the talent that can take advantage of that if they'll continue to prepare themselves. So we'll see how that goes. Another question that the Alabama team had was certainly at the offensive line. And I think they acquitted themselves well. I won't say that they went as far as what the wide receiver tandem did and said, we're going to turn your question into a strength. I don't think the offensive line went that far. But they certainly dialed back, being a liability, which you know, most would say the offensive line was a liability in 2021. There were a couple of interesting sort of transitions and this sort of since, you know, saving into a spin on depth chart and maybe not produce him anymore and all that stuff. It was kind of fun to watch that. But Emil Ekior, and all sort of centers at the guard positions. Emil Ekior dinged up, undisclosed as far as I could tell, and he missed a few days in practice. And so coach, you know, said, hey, we're going to ease him back and we're going to reward the players that played while Ekki was out, which makes sense, especially when those guys are starter quality. And so Kendall Randolph was going to start at left guard ahead of Javon Cohen, and Ekior was going to man his position at the right guard, which he's had nailed down the last couple of seasons. With Ekki missing some time, the Alabama staff elected to put Kendall Randolph at the right guard and then bring Javon Cohen at the left guard, which is where he started all of last season, so there's some stability there. And that unit performed well. The unit as a whole played better when Ekior returned, and so that put Kendall Randolph at left and Emil Ekior at right guards. And so that's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I still, for the long game, I still like Javon Cohen at that guard position. But I thought Kendall Randolph played pretty well. And I thought Darian Dalcourt, and I thought that he might not earn the starting position, but he certainly did in camp. I really like what Seth McLaughlin did across the line last year. I wouldn't rule him out yet, but Darian Dalcourt, I thought, played really well. And I thought he was physical. And there were a couple times, and I would watch it on TV, which you get a different perspective than if you're live. But I thought Dalcourt, there was a lot of downfield runs or passes or plays, and Dalcourt was downfield. And he seemed to be, the camera angle sort of flashes and they follow the ball and then, they change to another camera. Dalcourt was in a lot of shots, and that tells me that he's active and he's moving to and with the ball. He's trying to find someone to block. He's trying to participate, extend his participation in the play. And that speaks to a guy that really wants to play, that really wants to perform, and is really trying to make a name for himself. So I was impressed by that. We'll see how the line continues to come across. We'll have a bigger contest, this week and in future weeks. So we'll see how the the offensive line progresses. Again, overall, I think they demonstrated themselves is not a liability. Down in and down out, and Saban made a point of this, there were some explosive running plays, but down in and down out, the 3, 4, 5 yards, just to keep the chains moving, keep the defense on the field, converting third downs. It wasn't the offensive line was not consistent, and there's ample opportunity for improvement there. And I suspect that we'll see the Tide fans will see improvement there. I will say, I think the facilities, university facilities, you know, they did some great work this offseason removing the turnstile from the right side of the line. And so I think across the board, Alabama fans can expect to see improved improved performance and I think incremental improvement as the season goes on. The new offensive line coach, you just Eric Wolford, from what I read and what I see, people just can't say enough good things about him. And so I think over the course of the season, more time on campus, more time with the players, more practice, more reps, games, film study, that we're going to see some improvement. But as Tide fans, we can absolutely work with this. We can be very pleased and proud of what we're seeing and the direction we think the offensive line is going to go. All right, let's take a look at mini game ball on offense. And I tell you what, I'm going to zig where a lot of people are zagging. I saw a lot of commentary that was down on Robbie Outs. And I'm going to tell you, I feel very differently about that. And I'm gonna explain that for my money. And we had a Zoom call Saturday morning, and I sort of stood on the desk for Robbie Outs is not a tight end, he's a fullback, and we sort of lumped the fullback and the halfback and the tight end together. And so when the depth chart came in, someone had to be at the top of the list, and it wasn't going to be a true freshman, and it wasn't going to be Cam, who missed most of camp, and it wasn't going to be the transfer that's still learning the playbook. It has to be somebody, though, and so we're going to put Robbie there. And because we lump those players, we can do that. But Robbie's really a fullback, and that's kind of probably all he is and probably all he'll ever be. And I said that Saturday with emphasis. And it turns out that there's truth to that. But he demonstrated a great deal of versatility Saturday that I don't know that I expected it from him. He lined up in the backfield like he's sort of always done. He lined up in a traditional tight end, you know, off the tackle on both sides of the ball. He lined up in an H-back, which he's done that before. He split out wide, like wide, far wide, outside the splits or outside the numbers wide. He lined up in a slot and just in a lot of motion, just incredible amount of motion. So I was impressed, you know, with his versatility. Now, the people that have commented sort of negative towards Robbie, you know, I give them their point. Robbie did miss a couple blocks, and he'd be the first one to talk about that. And without question, there's no exceptions in these things. He needs to improve upon that, and he'd be the first one to say that. Kitzelman, I agree, is probably the better pure tight end, and I think Latu is as well. And, you know, yes, I agree, the offense will have another gear when Latu's in place. But I also know that, like I said, I was very impressed with Robbie's versatility. And I say all this to really build up to the mini game ball that I'm giving. He had an incredible hustle play. He had maybe an all-time caliber hustle play. And it came on Holden's second touchdown. It was later in the second quarter, and it put the Alabama score at 41. If you remember, that Holden's touchdown was a 17-yard pass to the left. It was just an easy pitch and catch. He made a move. Holden did. Lost the defender. Bryce put the ball up, and it was an easy touchdown, sort of pitch and catch. Robbie Outs lined up as in a tight end spot, so not a fullback or not an H-back, but he lined up in a pure tight end position, but on the right side. So he was opposite side of where the ball was going. And he crossed the formation. I had to watch it back a couple of times in video. The first time I saw it, I was like, am I seeing what I think I'm seeing? Went back and watched it again, and they had a couple of different angles. Robbie crossed the formation and was hustling to catch up with the defenders that were closest to Holden. And it presented as he was hustling to try to get downfield to assist if a block was needed. Now, he very easily, opposite side, out of the play, the ball's going, you know, not off the line of scrimmage, but it's a pass. It's passed to the outside. And so he's got, what, three quarters of the field, and it's in the plays, you know, towards the corner of the end zone. He's got three quarters of the field. The play is away from him. And so it'd be very easy for him to kind of, I'm gonna present and I'm going to take the play off. But he hustled, you know, almost seeking out an opportunity to assist the play. And by comparison, and be careful here, I'm not mad at any of the players, but in comparison, when Bryce ran for his touchdown and he had the green grass ahead of him, and literally as he was running, he was looking around for who's going to wallop me, because it can't be this free to score a touchdown. And Holden was in the end zone, and there was a defender on Holden. And when Bryce took off, that defender turned and ran towards Bryce. And while this was happening, Holden was dancing in the end zone because he knew that Bryce was going to score. But rather than, like, let me try to, you know, what I can do, because that's my guy, he was dancing in the end zone. Now, I'm not mad at Holden. He's, I think, going to be one of my favorite receivers on this team. But the comparison, the contrast between what I saw Robbie do, trying to hunt down someone, trying to run and catch up to and get in front of someone to block, looking for an opportunity, versus celebrating a touchdown that hasn't yet happened, those are two different things. And so for that, I give Robbie the mini game ball. All right, we're going to flip the field to defense. Overall, just wow, a dominating performance. It was, you know, Utah State's a game, but outmatched performance, our opponent. We think they're going to do, in fact, we're impressed with Utah State, and we think they're going to do well in their conference. Just Saturday was what it was. And, but overall, we thought the Alabama defense was dominating. 0 points allowed. That doesn't happen. It really doesn't. Shutouts don't happen in sort of this brand or this era of football, especially with a team that really puts up a lot of yards and a lot of points like Utah State does. Typically, teams like that, even from smaller conferences, it's in their DNA to score. It's in their DNA to move the ball around. They know how to do it, and some of their techniques work against almost any opponent. Now, maybe not for as many plays, but we rarely shut teams out anymore. Even if you want to say a lesser opponent or a money game or however you want to phrase it. And so truly a dominating performance that this Alabama defense put up. Utah State was 3 of 17 on third downs there and 2 of 4 on their fourth down attempts. So definitely stifled, not an opportunity for extended plays or extended drives. Here's something that you kind of run the numbers on. This is pretty impressive. Overall, the Alabama defense allowed 136 total yards. Now, that's a very low number, 136 yards, 57 yards passing, and 79 yards rushing. So that's the distribution there. Of note, the very first play from scrimmage, Utah State completed a pass over Terry and Arnold, and it was a 23-yard play. Now, they ended up going 4 and out because they went 3 and out after first play, first down. But that was a 23-yard play. And so if you look at 23 yards on that one play in a drive that really went nowhere, 23 of their 57 pass yards were on that play. So that's 40% of their passing totals in that singular play on a drive that sort of went nowhere. First play of the game where they were taking a shot at a first-time starting cornerback. So all of that we can understand as Alabama fans. And then it only just compounds the dominant performance that the Tide had the rest of the day. And then the 23 yards of the 136-yard total was 17%. So 17% of their overall production was on that one play. Again, we understand as Tide fans, oh, yeah, okay, they took a shot first play of the game. We're going to get turned around. Try not to let that happen again, and we didn't. or the Alabama defense didn't. One negative, and you know, you have to hunt and peck for negatives about this Alabama performance. And a lot of people tag this as a negative, and I'm going to tell you, man, this is actually a positive. You know, Alabama put up this just pure dominant performance. And the knock on it is that Alabama logged zero sacks and zero turnovers. And my thought is, you know, typically you would expect Alabama to probably have a turnover and you know, probably a sack and such. One thing that I thought was interesting on third and longs, and this contributes to, you know, why they didn't convert very many of them, on third and longs, Utah State would just run the ball. And so they weren't going to put their quarterback in a position to get sacked. They weren't going to put their quarterback in a position to maybe have to heave one up and get an interception. So they were playing sort of a different numbers game in that regard. And so that contributed to zero sacks and zero turnovers. Well, a lot of times when you shut out an opponent and you truly dominate them, you do that by backing them up, sacking their quarterback, or taking the ball away from them, interceptions or turnovers or whatever. And so to put up such a dominant performance and actually have none of those big defensive plays, sacks and turnovers, for my money, that's even more impressive because you didn't use, in having a dominant performance, you didn't use the weapons that generally characterize a dominant performance. So I thought that was interesting. They did have six pass catchers, so they did attempt to distribute the ball. Only two had two receptions, and four players had one. So not a lot of repeat success in the passing game there. Lots of rotation, the Alabama defense, lots of rotation, and just an incredible amount of growth. So let's hit some individuals. There's too many to name, so we'll call off a couple. Will Anderson, he lived up to his billing. Again, no, there were no sacks, and so he didn't have, you know, an 18-sack day. But he lived up to his billing. He blew up a running back on an RPO. And I like, you know, Kubelik said from the sideline, you know, if you're going to option off of Will Anderson, it's really not a good idea because he's so fast that he can just blow up what you're trying to option on. And so maybe the quarterback should have kept the ball and sort of bounced it out. I think Will probably would have adjusted quick enough to eat that up, but he just absolutely ate up the running back for a big loss there. He was disruptive even when he wasn't making the play, and that's, for my money, that's the hallmark of Will Anderson. We talked about that so many times last season, and we saw it again Saturday. Justin Aboigbe doesn't get a lot of love, doesn't get a lot of press, but he had a big run stuff early in the game. I thought he looked a little more muscular. He looked a little, you know, twitchier, a little faster. I think he's going to be a contributor this season. He's always has been, but sort of more of a stabilizing baseline. I think we're going to see a few more big plays out of him this season, so that'll be fun to watch. Tim Smith had a big run stuff. He looked active. I think he's going to be a contributor, certainly, for the Alabama defense. Jaheim Otis, just a lot of stories about him and his weight loss and his tenacity. And I love Saban, an oppressor, said, you know, I don't want to get too technical. You know, without getting too technical, he's just hard to block. And so we'll take that. We'll take guys that are just hard to block on the defensive front. And I think the fact that he got playing time at all is impressive. The fact that he got it spots early and was in a rotation really bodes well. So I think we're going to see a lot of Jaheim Otis as the season progresses. He's a true freshman. He's absolutely going to get better and better and contribute more and more as the season goes on. Linebackers, Jalen Moody, it's not his first start, but it's his first season as a starter. And so he started when other people have been out. But this is his first, you know, he was in the portal and then came back and, you know, for an opportunity to fight and win the starting job. He did that. And it was, you know, proud to see him have a big performance, number 42 at the middle linebacker. He led the team with six tackles, which itself speaks to a lot of rotation. Only six tackles was your leader. It's easily sometimes twice that. But that speaks to a lot of the rotation, the number of players. Deontay Lawson also subbed in at the middle linebacker spot. And I owe everyone a correction. In the defense, I was talking about DeMoy Kennedy as playing a platoon with Jalen Moody at the middle linebacker spot opposite Henry Toa'atoa. And everything I said, I agree with, except for I meant to talk about Deontay Lawson instead of DeMoy Kennedy. So I do think that as we get, you know, a couple of games in, there is an opportunity for Lawson to overtake Moody. And if he doesn't just outright overtake him, I think there's an opportunity for there to be a platoon at the position, depending upon down and distance or opponent or how they attack offensively. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. He looks like a beast out there. I'm just going to say Lawson does. Jordan Battle and DeMarco Helms, I thought, played well. It was satisfying to see that they weren't the leading tacklers. A lot of times last year, they would be the leading tacklers. It was amazing how many times Helms, and even though he was sometimes playing in a platoon, how he might have, you know, 9 or 10 or 12 or 11, you know, tackles on the day. And so the fact that he only had 2 was not an indictment of his performance. It was praise for the rest of the defense. So that was good. He also had an incredible pass breakup, which really speaks to his athleticism. And again, Battle looked really good out there as well. The corner positions, I really like the depth that Alabama has demonstrated. And you know, 4 played: Kool-Aid McKinstry, Eli Ricks, Kyrie Jackson, and Terrion Arnold all played at the cornerback position. Brian Branch, he played a little bit at the corner as well, and I think that's just giving him some reps, you know, at the position. But he's a quality player as well. But I really like the length and the size that these guys have, and I think most of them really flashed. Terrion, I'm not picking on him. He was sort of attacked on that first play, but the rest of the time he was in there, he seemed to settle down. And that's the kind of thing, put it on film, and likely, you know, corners, the quality ones, they learn and they don't get beaten in that way again. It's a good, you know, it wasn't a touchdown. We've seen it be a touchdown before, and this was not a touchdown. So, you know, we'll take that certainly as well. I think, you know, the dime package, I'm super excited about the dime package with Brian Branch and Malachi Moore on the field at the same time. I will say this, though, and I did see this in the game, Malachi Moore, I like him better in the box than I do out of the box. He has a tendency to get beat in coverage, and he did on Saturday. He did get beat in coverage. It was just a bad pass, and the receiver made a bad play on the ball. But had that ball been spotted well, it potentially could have been a touchdown, certainly a big play. And Malachi could have been in better position, but he was not. And so I think that's something that the coaching staff will work with him on and he'll work on. But I do like my Malachi closer to the box and as opposed to out. So that's something we'll keep an eye on. He gave a couple he got beat in coverage a couple times last year. And in his freshman year, he seemed to play when he was freshman All-America. I mean, he has a world of talent, don't get me wrong. But he seems his big plays seem to come, you know, closer to the box. So we'll see how that plays out. Mini game ball is Kyrie Jackson. I couldn't talk about corners without talking about Kyrie specifically. And, man, he had a highlight play of the day. Like, if they go back and you know, touchdowns and receiving catches and stuff like that are, you know, play of the year candidates. But if you're gonna answer me honestly about, you know, a play of the day, defensively play of the game, maybe a defensive, you know, play of the season, it's going to be what Kyrie did. You know, there's a little swing pass, and it was well blocked, and the blocker came to pick up Kyrie, and Kyrie just had nothing of it. And he didn't juke or spin around or try to, you know, outwit the defender. He just said, the ball carrier is behind you, so I'm going through you. And he did, and he ran through the blocker, and it was the blocker. It was the momentum of the blocker going backwards that actually tackled the runner. And so he went up there and effectively tackled both of them, or effectively just knocked them both over as bowling pins, right? And that was super impressive. That's just one of those plays that gets your blood flowing. That's just, you know, knocking, you know, I want to say helmet knocking football. It wasn't a legal hit. I don't mean anything like that, but that's just rock and sock 'em physical football there. So you tip your hat to that kind of play. All right, special teams. You know, Will Reichert was 2 of 2 on his field goals, had a long of 45. So that was nice. 7 of 7 on his PATs. So he had a nice, productive 13-point day, which sometimes it's funny to see the points add up for kickers because, you know, with the field goals and the PATs, they get a little taste of all the touchdown action. James Burnup had a really nice 51-yard punt. His successful punt, and it's not his fault, but his successful punt, and I want to pause on a 51-yard punt, is incredible, whoever kicks it. But it just – I wasn't sold on him last year. And so for him to come in his first punt and hit a 51-yarder, very pleased with that. And so hopefully that's representative of more of what we'll see from him. But he did have his second punt blocked. And again, I don't think that's his fault. I don't think that was an operation error from that perspective. I think late in the game, they did an all-out blitz. And, you know, people can argue, not blitz, but, you know, coming after the punter. And you can argue, should they have done that? I don't know. They did, and we weren't ready for it. And I looked like, you know, Toa maybe missed his block there. I think that's imminently fixable, and so I'm not really worried about it. And in fact, you know, if I'm honest, and if Coach Saban were honest, it'd be like, oh, good, I got something to bitch about, and you know, keep their attention. Something that they have to continue to work on because look, we messed this up pretty good, and that's the type of play. If it happens the wrong time against the wrong opponent, in the wrong situation, it can cost you a ball game. So I'm not too terribly upset that it happened because, you know, we can use that as, you know, never waste a loss. Right. And so we can build on that. Kool-Aid McKinstry as the punt returner. I don't like it. I'm just gonna be straight up. I don't like it. I'm old enough to remember not liking Fernando Bryant returning punts. You've got your top corner and you're going to risk him returning punts. I like it to be a younger guy, maybe your third receiver, that type of player. But, you know, to put your best cornerback out there, we've done it as Alabama fans. We've done it before. Other teams do it. So, you know, it is what it is. But Kool-Aid McKinstry, for as much as I don't like it, I'm going to tell you straight up, damn, he looked good doing it. Very fluid, natural, athletic. I had it stuck in my head that he was more like a Dre Kirkpatrick, tall, lean, and maybe a little bit stiff, but, you know, certainly capable of playing the corner. No, McKinstry's not that. He's got more juke and you know, a little more, no pun intended, but a little more fluid in his athleticism. And he looked really good and just natural at the punt return position. So I would not be surprised if he returned a couple of them this season or had big returns in the punting game because he just looked that good doing it. All right, so what's next for this Alabama team? In general, I'm going to say this Alabama team needs to keep its wits, stay out of the press, all that stuff. Keep your head down, go to work, trust the process, work the process, game by game, all the mantras that you sort of get lost in coach speak, but they're true because they're true. And there's not much that this team or this collection of talent can't do if they'll just, you know, attack every day, one at a time. They're just an incredible amount of talent accumulated on this team. And there seems to be a willful interest in getting reps and experience to as many guys as possible. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And you could argue that that's something that maybe last year's team could have benefited by. And, you know, there's a lot of discussions are around, you know, to be had on that too. You know, the players got to be ready for it. And this team looks like they are. So that's exciting. We want to talk about what's next up for this team a little more specifically. It's an early kick next week in Austin against Texas. Now, I can't understand why this is a noon kickoff or 11. in Tuscaloosa, Central Time. Why is it an 11 a.m. kickoff? This I remember we used to play like the JP game at 11 in Birmingham. And I don't know how we ever made some of those games, but why is this an 11 o'clock game? I don't know. Why is this not a prime time, you know, cash in your commercial, you know, billing for a game like this, game of the week? I don't have answers to any of those questions, but nonetheless, it's going to be an early kick down in Austin, and it's going to be a step up in talent, you know, of course, and it's going to be a hostile playground, and that's fine. I think Texas is not back. I think, you know, play to play, I think the running game improves. I think Cam Latu returns, and I think he elevates the tight end position, and so that provides an element that was not available to Alabama on Saturday. So I think there's a gear there. I think the passing game continues to bloom. I think part of that is because of Cam, and part of it is because of the other guys. They have a week under their belt, and boy, scoring those, you know, getting those catches and scoring those touchdowns are fun. So let's practice hard, because I want more of that. I think we're going to see that type of mentality across the receivers. And I think the defense just picks up where they left off. They're going to say, yeah, all right, we're turning up the volume here with another opponent, but we're going to go out and we're going to do what we do. And if we do what we do, then we're not worried about, you know, what they do. And I think they're going to have that type of mentality. There's going to be a lot of Alabama knows Texas and Texas knows Alabama with the coaching, the coaches and more players than, you know, might imagine. But I'm going to tell you what, I think the tide is going to roll. I view this as Alabama truly just taking care of business. And I see this being a 38-10 style ball game. Might be close early. It might be 10-10. It might be 7-7. Might be 7-3 or 3-7 at the end of the first quarter, something like that. Texas will come out with a lot of emotion early. And if they can cash in on that emotion, then they could take the lead. It could be very close at the end of the first quarter. But I think through the remaining three quarters, Alabama steps up and steps away from Texas. And again, I think it's a multi-score differential. So 38-10 is what I am guessing. And so we appreciate all of you for listening. We ask that you go to iTunes or your sort of podcast delivery device machine and leave us a review. Sign up for our support team. We've got Zoom calls. And we've got sort of a text group, and that we're chatting during the games. We've got Zoom calls before the games, after the games, and then a group of us are getting together in Tuscaloosa later this season. It's not too late to join in that. So hop over and join the Zoom calls, and you know, have an opportunity to participate in that and support the show. But if you're listening, A1, we appreciate that. Without question. So this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just to shout out a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out, where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.